All right, well, let's get started. Dr. Bill Blatchford, I'd like to welcome you to the conference off of Blatchford Solutions. And I want to thank all of you for taking an hour out of your evening to be with us. Tonight, I am interviewing Dr. April Zigley from Sumner, Washington. April is one of the chapters in our book. If you have not read our book, Playing Your A-Game, the book came out last year. And what we did is we interviewed 23 successful doctors. And before I go further, I would like to define my definition of success is simply doing what you say you want to do. There is no measurement. There is no measure from anyone else that we should follow. So some of you recent arrivals on the phone, put the six button on your keypad on the phone. That will mute your background noises. We can all hear a little better. And then if you want to ask a question or I open up the questions, you can just hit the six again, and that will do it. So what we'll be doing tonight is I'm going to talk about April's practice for a few moments. I'm going to then ask April some questions. She will answer those. Then I will ask for questions from some of you that ask either myself or April. We'll wrap this call up right at 7 o'clock. If you've not read our book and are interested in our book, the title is Playing Your A-Game. We're giving all the proceeds to the American Diabetic Association and the University of Oregon Dental School, who is building, and they are building a new school right now, so they need all the money they can get. The American Diabetic Association, because our youngest daughter is developed type 1 diabetes at age 30, and for those of you that know about diabetes or have relatives, loved ones that have that disease, it's a terrible disease, and at this point there is no cure for it. So, you know, we're hoping with some more funding that perhaps it will be cured. So what I'd like to do is talk just a little about April's practice and why we chose her to be on this call. This is the first of a series of calls we'll be doing interviewing people from the book. April practiced in a small town, Sumner, Washington, and we'll ask April a little bit about the size of the town, median income, that sort of thing. But being from the Northwest, I know where Sumner is. Sumner is a rural area south side of Seattle, but I want to emphasize it is not Bellevue or Redmond where Microsoft is located. It is a rural, has been a farming and logging community for years. It is becoming a little bit of a bedroom community, but it is still, there are farms between metropolitan Seattle and Sumner. It's a small town. When I met April several years ago, about 4 years ago, April will give us the exact time probably, she had purchased a practice that was doing about $1 million. She had a large staff, and the practice was literally running her. While she was relatively successful financially for a relatively recent graduate, she also is a mother. She has two children. They're 5 and 7 right now. And one of her main concerns is she wanted more time with her family. And one of my premises forever has been that the first thing you do is design your life the way you want to lead your life, and then you design a practice which will support that, not the other way around. And
Larry Compton.
Thank you. And this is one of the premises I've taught for years. Some of you know I was a general dentist for 20 years. I practiced in a small town, Corvallis, Oregon. And as I was telling the first arrival on the phone today, Dale from Dallas, Texas, I have spent the month of August up here in the San Juans since the second year out of dental school because, again, I believe this theory that you design your life first and you practice to support it. That was April's thing. Just to give you an idea on April's practice, she's currently producing somewhere around 1.6, 1.7 million per year. And she, but the unique part about this practice, she does it with 3 team members. But they are cross-trained in every aspect of the practice that they can do. She has one in the front, office administrator. She's certainly more than a receptionist. She has one chairside assistant and one hygienist. And this is her team. And it's truly a team of people, and it's not a group of people all going separate directions at the same time. They're truly in sync with what April wants. April, the first question I have for you, when you started to work with us, what were the main things that you wanted to create? I mean, you had a good net income. What was it you wanted to create?
I wanted a practice that I enjoyed instead of feeling like I was worn out at the end of the day. And I was desperate for time with my kids. When I first met you, my oldest was 4 and my youngest was almost 1. And I left for work, they were asleep, and I got home and they were in bed, and I only saw them on the weekends. And on my oldest, I missed his first step, I missed first word, I missed so much that I did not want to miss that on my second.
Uh-huh.
And I was just desperate for some time.
So it really wasn't the money so much, although money has certainly improved. It was more the time, the quality time with your family.
Yeah, absolutely.
And the enjoy. I know you mentioned the practice you enjoy. What was it about the practice that you, what is it about? Well, let me ask you this question first, and a little bit on the negative side, and I hate to go here, but I will. What was it about the practice? What were some of the frustrations that you were experiencing?
Well, I like the dentistry, and I like dealing with the people. That's always been the fun part for me, but the management of it was taking over my life. I had 14 staff, and we were open almost 70 hours a week, between me and an associate doctor, and it was just, I didn't have any quality time to spend with the patients. I was constantly putting out fires with the staff. Associates, as the nature of them is, they work for you for a year or two, and then they move on. And that was really, really frustrating for me because what I wanted was to give what I felt was excellent care, and I didn't feel like I was. I was certainly giving adequate care,
mm-hmm.
but it did not fit into my criteria of what was excellent.
April, if we were to, I ask you, and I'm asking you, what would you say to, we're going to talk about several keys here today, what would maybe the main key be to making your practice successful and making the changes that you made?
Well, the most important thing for me was to actually have a vision of what I wanted, and I struggled with that because I had it somewhere in my head, this vague idea of what I wanted it to be. But it wasn't until you sat me down and helped me actually enunciate clearly and state it clearly what I wanted long term. Without that vision, I would have never, ever have gotten there.
One of the things that I believe in is that, and April's an example of it, is most of us deal from a conversation of what we don't want. But we don't ever become clear about what it is that we do want out of our life and out of our practice. And as a result, we spend a lot of time worrying about what we don't want. I remember watching a lecture given by a man named Dennis Waitley one time, and he talked about the fact that the brain really can't determine between good ideas and bad ideas. It's just all ideas to the brain. And it tends to move towards our most dominant thoughts. And when we're dealing from a position of, I don't want this, we keep moving right back to the same place. And when we get clear on the vision of what we do want, we start figuring out ways to make it happen. April, when you started looking at vision, and let's talk about, you've already mentioned the fact that you wanted more time with your family, and that's a given. And you're now working, what, 4 days a week or 3.5? What is your schedule?
3.5.
3.5 days a week.
We work 28 hours a week now.
28 hours a week. And today I was talking to April earlier, and she said that she's taking this week off, actually. So April's here on her vacation. And she's also taking 2 more weeks off in August. So she's basically taking, I guess you count this in July, but this is almost 3 weeks off here in the last half of the summer. And the reason is just a little slow in her office, so why sit there and worry about it? Get out and enjoy it because it will hit in the fall. So what is it about vision? When you describe your vision, what are the key points in that vision statement that you put together?
I was very clear about, first off, I was clear about who we're going to treat,
uh-huh.
who our patients are going to be, how they're going to appreciate us, who we're going to focus our energies on. Because so much of the time we focus our energies on the ones that are sticking up like a bad thorn and giving us hassles, mm-hmm. that we don't focus on the good ones. So I was clear that I wanted to focus on the good ones. And then I was clear on what kind of dentistry I wanted to do. I quit doing the stuff that I hated but I felt like I had to do because I was a general dentist.
April, what are the things you primarily do in your practice now? What types of treatment?
We do most general dentistry. I mean, we're a general dental office. that, and I happen to have a passion for cosmetics, so we do a lot of cosmetic dentistry, but I don't do root canals. I don't do extractions. We don't, as of February, we don't see kids anymore. I don't do perio surgery.
Yeah, this is one of the things that I find a little unusual about April's practice, and here she is. She is a young mother, and a lot of people kind of associate young female doctors with doing a lot of children, and April does not do children. She loves children, but she just doesn't like to treat them. I find that interesting. Tell me a little bit about the type of patients that you want to treat. I mean, what were the decisions you made along those lines? I know you, and I will add this, April is a provider for Delta Dental, which is a large insurance company in the state of Washington. Probably Delta probably has as large a percentage of participants in Washington as any place in the country. They have Boeing aircraft, and April's office is relatively close to the Renton plant for Boeing. Boeing has 135,000 employees in the Seattle area, and they all have Delta. So you are a Delta provider. What type of patients is it you're looking for?
We want patients who appreciate and value us. We ask some unusual things of our patients, and one of the first things we do is talk to them about what they want long-term and find out all of that about them. And if we don't meet their needs, we tell them. We absolutely are not going to be the practice if they're looking for the cheapest in something. We don't cater to people who only want emergency treatment. Although we'll do that, but that's not what we're about.
I see.
If someone has an emergency, we aren't going to turn them away. But that's not what our practice is about.
I know one thing you mentioned to me at one point is you have enough rooms. I mean, you have several rooms in your office, but you actually work out of two, so you always have enough room to put an emergency in and spend a few minutes with them.
Absolutely. We really want, I mean, I'm so passionate about knowing our patients. We know what they want. We know what they, what their lives are like. I would guarantee we know 100% more about them than they know about us.
Uh-huh. Interesting. So in other words, you don't spend a lot of time discussing your philosophy of treatment with your patients. It's more about finding out what they want.
Right.
You produce quite a bit of dentistry. I mean, you do it in 3.5 days a week with your three team members. Tell me about how your team interacts with people so that you can produce this kind of dentistry. And how does your team of three, how do they interact with each other so that they can produce this? I mean, I hear teams that are producing half as much dentistry as you with twice as many people say they're all overworked and busy and can't get things done. How did you select these three people out of the 14? Now, the 14 did include an associate.
Right. First off, I found people that I absolutely love to be around. Everybody else is gone. But some of them weeded themselves out, or I weeded them out, or even there were a few at the end that my core team weeded out. If they weren't enjoyable for me to be around, I spend too much time at work, 28 hours a week, to want to be around people I didn't enjoy. And then my second criteria is they had to love other people.
Uh-huh.
Be absolutely curious about other people.
Curious and positive.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun to watch April's team come to a seminar because everybody wants to. It's like when April's team speaks, everybody listens. I remember one time a comment you made, April, with a team member, we'll call her a staff member at that time. There was a decision that came up in your office, and your comment to her was, I've already made that decision. Your choice is whether you want to work here or not. April, tell me how that comment fits in with loving your patient or loving your staff.
Well, I was very clear on my vision and what my vision was going to be, and my vision included very specific ways that we were going to take extraordinary care of our guests. We were not going to provide just adequate. We were going to provide the best we knew to be excellent in everything, the way we talked to them, the way we treated their time when they were in our office, the way we answered the phone, the way we handled our finances. Every single aspect was going to be the best that we could even conceive it to be. And I had team members who didn't buy into that at all. So if they didn't, then that to me said they weren't committed to excellence. And so I basically had told her decision was not, are we going to now, she wanted us to offer lower fees for certain patients. And I said, well, if I do that, I cannot choose the very best lab, and I will not choose something that I know is inferior.
I remember that discussion came up at a time when you were raising your fees, and your fees are higher than most of the dentists in your community. And
yeah.
A lot of dentists believe that people select patients based on fee, and that's been something I've disputed for years, is that regardless of what you charge, I mean, Starbucks is an example, they pay $3 for a cup of coffee. There are many, many examples we can go to that people see the value they would pay it. April, tell us a little bit about a patient experience. Let's talk about a patient calling your office as a new patient and talk a little bit about the conversation that Ann has with these people on the phone, and then also as they come to your office, what are some of the things that you do with a new patient or all your patients, but maybe include in that the spa amenities that you do, questions you ask. How you deal with that?
Well, when they call, they get an extraordinary greeting right from the beginning. Nobody just picks up the phone and says, hello, Dr. Zigley's office. That doesn't happen. We don't put people on hold. We have headsets that we wear in the office, and if the phone rings twice, it's Jen's turn to answer the phone. That means Ann can't get it.
Uh-huh.
So, and we have a sequence down the thing, and she'll just step out of the room and answer the phone. I'm fine working on my own. The phone's more important, and one of those two always gets the line. We only have two lines. So one of them will get it, or we have a voicemail message.
Well, April, I come to your office sometimes, and you answer the phone.
Yeah. I answer the phone, too. But sometimes they'll hand me the headset, and then it's my turn to answer the phone.
Huh?
But that's the thing. Absolutely every person in our office can answer the phone, have a conversation, answer a financial question, schedule an appointment. Any of that, every single one of us can handle. So the patient doesn't get shuffled off.
They don't get transferred to the next person, which is just a little bit more polite way to say that's not my job, but truly that's what people are saying when they say that. That's not my department. I don't deal with that. You'll have to talk to so-and-so. It's the same thing that we all say we don't like. All right, so on the phone, what are some of the questions that anybody in your team would ask if a patient called? Well, let's ask this. What is the Mr. requests that people are making to your office at this point? I mean, you do quite a bit of marketing as well.
Well, we get one of two things. Either we'll hear, I heard about your office from a friend, I need a new dentist, and I need to get my teeth cleaned.
Mm-hmm.
That's how a lot of people will start. Or we have people, the other half of our patients are calling for consults.
Uh-huh. And how do you deal with the one that wants their teeth cleaned and they're looking for a new dentist? I mean, this is where I think this is important, because for every doctor on the phone, basically every patient that we get as a new patient is transferring mm-hmm. from another dental office, whether it's in another town
right.
or in the same town. I mean, it was somebody's patient. How do you deal with these calls?
Well, you know, my team is very careful to immediately assure them that they've called the right office. They don't need to look further. They will get exceptional care in our office.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go on to ask them, what could we do make your visit with us the best you've ever had? They'll usually start telling us, well, at my last office, I didn't get my financial stuff wasn't clear. I didn't know how much I was going to owe. They didn't do this with my insurance, or I had pain, or whatever it is. They'll start telling us their bad experiences a lot of the time at that point. And we have a sheet by every phone, and they start taking notes. So we make sure that isn't going to happen.
So you just come right out and ask them what they're looking for in a dentist, or what
uh-huh.
it was that you can do to make their visit extraordinary.
Right.
And I know you're not looking for satisfaction. You're looking for loyalty. You're looking for that wow factor, and you start right out with that, find out what they're looking for.
Right.
What are some of the questions you ask patients on the phone beyond what they're looking for in a dentist? Say, I'm looking for a consultation. My friend had some veneers done. I'm curious about it. I'd like to find out what's available for myself.
You know, a lot of times we'll ask them what led them to want that, what are they thinking about, do they have something coming up that inspired them to call us now. We had somebody call today, told Ann she wanted to get her teeth whitened, and Ann asked her, you know, what does white look like to you?
Uh-huh.
And she said, well, I've got all these different colored crowns, but I want to whiten everything to match them.
Mm-hmm.
And Ann said, you have lots of different colored crowns. Have you been through a lot of dentistry? Oh, yeah, I've had this, that, and the other. She started explaining it all to Ann, and Ann asked her, does it embarrass you to have different colors? And she said, well, yeah, now my grandkids are mentioning that I have all these different colors of teeth in my mouth, and I have yellow teeth. And Anne said, yellow teeth? Tell me more about your yellow teeth. And so this woman gave her this whole long story. And so then she said, well, what inspired you to call us now?
Uh-huh.
And she's got her 40th high school reunion coming up in 3 weeks.
I just attended my 45th, so I know how she feels. Excellent.
And
so this is a great question. So these questions are all to evoke emotions, the patient talking. Excellent. What else?
It turned out that she had no idea what was possible in dentistry. She came straight away in. We had a slow day today, so Anne asked her if she wanted to come straight in and drove an hour and a half to get to our office. And came in, and Jen sat down and talked to her and showed her pictures. And Anne had already told her that it could cost as much as a brand new car.
She told her this on the phone. Now, this is something that we teach that I think a lot of people don't really do. We talk about money on their initial phone call. And, April, how specific do you get with that? A lot of doctors ask me that question. How specific can you be, can Anne be on the phone? And you said a new car. Mm-hmm. That could be a lot of money.
Right. Well, and the woman did ask Anne what kind of car.
Uh-huh.
And
very
Anne
good.
Said it can vary from a very nice mid-level sedan to a luxury automobile.
Uh-huh. And so she knew that before she even made the appointment.
Right.
What do you find the result? I mean, what do you find the effect of that question is with people?
Well, I think they appreciate knowing ahead of time that it's not going to cost them what their insurance backs them. I don't really think people have any idea. There are a few that do, and they're getting savvier with the Internet. But most people don't really know how much it might cost, and they don't want to come in and be embarrassed sitting in front of you if they can't afford
it. Uh-huh. Okay, so let's say the patient says, okay, I realize it's that much, and does she bring up finances at that time or payment plans?
She does. She, you know, she, occasionally, I mean, the woman today said, wow, that is a lot of money. And Anne said to her, I realize it's a lot of money, but you're worth it.
Uh-huh, very good.
And the lady said, yeah, I am. And Anne said, just so that you know, we have several payment options available, and I'm going to email you right now the information on them.
Very good.
And sent the links to Care Credit and Capital One right over to her.
So that was could have actually been set up before she arrived in the office had you had a little more time between the call and the visit.
Right.
Now,
right.
April, when she arrives in the office, what happens? What takes place? Yeah, because I know you have how many new patients a month are you seeing?
We average 25.
About 25. So not a great number of patients. I mean, given the 1.6 or 7 that you're going to do this year. Or maybe a little higher than that. Pretty good number. You're seeing roughly two a day. You're certainly busy. What takes place when a patient arrives in the office?
Well, we make sure that whoever had the initial phone conversation with them is the one that's going to greet them. If that means I'm scaling and hygiene and my assistant is getting my patient ready and Anne's doing something else, then that's the way it happens.
Uh-huh.
Whoever it is going to take the first 5 minutes, and we call it introducing them to our party, because we all know each other, but here's a brand new guest coming in that doesn't know all of us, but they have a connection with the one person that they spoke with. That one person gives them a little tour of the office, introduces them to everyone else, and then hands them off to whoever will be their provider.
I see. Very good. And then what takes place? Somebody sits down with them? Where do you sit with them? What kind of questions are you asking? What do you do?
Well, it depends. If it's Helen in hygiene, she generally sits down with them in the hygiene room and starts talking to them about what she can do for them today. And, you know, generally she'll hear, I just want to get my teeth cleaned. And she'll start asking them, have you thought, you know, we want to make sure any plan we give you fits into your long-term goals. We don't want to piecemeal stuff together if that's not what you want. So we want to just ask you some questions. Find out what your long-term goals are, and they'll ask them, 20 years from now, what do you want your teeth to look and feel like? And start an entire conversation with them and get them dreaming about it and talking about all the different things that had happened in the past and how they want to avoid having it happen in the future. And there are some times that she's taking the entire hour and a half of our initial hygiene visit and just talked with them.
Very good.
Hasn't even looked in their mouth.
And so when she gets, I know that she gets sometimes whoever it is, whether it's Helen in hygiene or Anne, or and again, they get all the way through what possibilities are for treatment based on the patient's long-term goals, and they actually talk money very often before they see you.
Right.
How then are you introduced to the patient?
Helen or whoever it is will go and get me, bring me in, and while I'm sitting facing the patient, they'll give me a brief rundown of what they talked about. Say, this is so-and-so, and, you know, we talked about their long-term goals, and this is what they've had happen in the past, and they don't want that to happen. And we talked about this tooth and this tooth that they're particularly unhappy about, and they'd like things to be whiter and straighter. You know, this is what we talked about money-wise. This is what their fears are about proceeding with treatment. And so I'll get all of that. And then whichever one of them is transferring the patient, say, did I get all of it? Did I cover everything?
Uh-huh.
And that will give our guest a chance to say yes.
And so they turn to the patient and ask that question. So the patient has an opportunity to add to that or say, no, that's not what I meant. Very good.
Right.
All right, April, tell us a little bit about, so that's interesting about your the way you present treatment. That would be a way I'm very familiar with, of course. But I really like that. Well, tell us a little bit about then you do your examination, and I don't want to go into how you do the exam today because everybody does it slightly different, but the patient then does get a complete examination as thorough as anyone can do, and then you do prepare an estimate with more details.
Right.
What happens?
It depends. If it's a really complex treatment plan, we generally will bring them back.
Uh-huh.
Have them come back in a day or two. We can have photo imaging ready for them to show them what things could look like. Have a the entire treatment plan phased out and talk about all the options for them. But some people, they want to know now.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, it's not that hard, really. We have Dentrix. We put the information in and get the estimate. And we have some forms in our office that we fill out with all the different, we'll have the total, how much they might get back from their insurance, what their payment plan could be like with Care Credit and Capital One and cash discount.
Very good. So that's all done for them that day, and a lot of people just go ahead and make a decision at that point.
Right.
April, to produce the numbers that you're producing, somewhere in the 130 to 150, 60 a month, working 3.5 days a week, what does your typical day look like?
Every morning from 8 to 10, we typically just see one patient from 8 to 10, and that's three or more units of Crown and Bridge. Yesterday was actually a perfect day for us. We had one patient in the morning for 2 hours, and we prepped 10 veneers, and then after that, we had another patient for 4 crowns, and that was an hour and a half, and then we had lunch. Then we had 2 emergencies, 2 consults, and we seated some crowns. That's a perfect day for us.
Nice day.
Yeah, not bad.
April, what is your? You've mentioned your marketing. What is your annual budget for marketing?
This year, our budget is $122,000.
$122,000. Now, a lot of doctors think that's a lot of money, and it is. April, what are the main media things that you do?
Actually, I misspoke. We've used $122,000. Our budget is $160,000.
Okay, $160,000. Even more. Very good.
Yeah. We do a lot of magazine ads, full-page magazine ads in the glossy magazines in our area, direct marketing. We spend a lot on our website and web development. In fact, we're designing a whole new site right now.
April, why don't you give us your web address so doctors can look at that website?
Oh, okay. It's aprilzigley.com.
And you want to spell that for them?
It's A-P-R-I-L, B like zebra, I-E, B-E. L-E.
And don't forget that first E in there, I-E-L-E.
I know.
And so forget that first E. Okay, so that's excellent. April, with spending $160,000, which is less than 10% of your gross on marketing, which is about the budget that we shoot for, what would you say your overhead is in your practice?
We are just slightly under 50%.
So slightly under 50%. Now, when we're talking about money, you mentioned that you pay your staff well. Tell us about your pay structure for your staff and tell us about what your 3 team members are making, because I find that very interesting.
My at the front desk and my assistant, they make the same, and that's about $26,000 a year salary.
Uh-huh.
But with their bonuses, they're on track to both of them be over $74,000 for the year.
Excellent. And so $26,000 to $35,000 will hire you almost any dental assistant in the Seattle area, and you're paying $74,000.
Right.
That's for a 3.5-day week. And how much time do they have off during the year on top of that?
9 weeks.
9 weeks off. So when the office is closed, everybody's gone.
Right.
And they have that time off. So that's basically paid for them. What would you say your hygienist, Helen, makes in a year?
Her main salary is $43,000 a year, and with her bonus, she is making
A little over 100.
Yeah.
Excellent. And that bonus works because that keeps your staff right at that 20% level for staff. And so some of you are wondering, how can somebody spend $160,000 on marketing and still operate at 50%? You see, the biggest items on anybody's budget, of course, are staff salaries, and April keeps hers at 20%, and by keeping it at 20 with a small team, they're very eager to produce large numbers. They're also they're not eager at all for April to bring on more people. As a matter of fact, when she had five, four of them came to her and said that one person had lost her focus, and we can do this with four. April called, and I said, well, if the staff said we can do it on four, let's go with it. Had you or I suggested, they probably couldn't have done it. And then after, maybe a year went by, three of the four came and said, three of us can do this. I think somebody had a baby or something, and things were changing. They said, we can do this with the three of us. And it's worked out really well. But you see, the team is part owners of this practice, and the fact that they get 20%, and they can divide that by 3, 5, 10, doesn't matter, it's still 20%. And so that really works. We have some time here. We have about 20 minutes. I've covered several things here with April. I would like to hear some questions from some of the doctors. If you could just announce just give us your name, where you practice, and questions you have for April or myself. Mark from Iowa, you came on. You said you wanted to hear a little more about practicing in a small town. No one's asked April yet what size your town is.
Yes, this is Mark from Iowa. I've been practicing 21 years, and my practice sounds similar to yours. However, I have an additional staff member, and my numbers are similar. I must confess, I only see patients 3 days a week.
Uh-huh, good.
Question I guess I would have would be on the advertising of it. Your expenses are dramatically more than mine. And could you tell me a little bit more about your imaging that you do in consults?
We started doing it ourselves and discovered we didn't have enough time to do it. So we send them out to a company called SmilePix. We take the photo, email it to them, tell them what we want, they'll image it and send it back to us in 24 hours. So then we just print it and we've got it to give to them.
That's easy. That's the company that does that. SmileVision.
Yes,
the same.
And as you were speaking, I was trying to vision flow patterns with only one assistant.
Uh-huh.
And I was struggling with that a little bit, as far as keeping up, on the back and sterilization and assisting chair side and the hygienist and keeping somebody at the front desk. Can you kind of tell us what that flow pattern looks like during a really busy time, on a Monday when phones ring in emergencies and...
Uh-huh.
And you have that big case.
Well, our busiest time is in the afternoon when we're seeing quite a few patients.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody runs in. Because we have those hands-free headsets, we can be anywhere in the office doing anything, still handle the phones, whatever else is going on. And to be honest, I run a lot of instruments and turn over the rooms.
Good for you.
I think that's one of the keys is this complete cross-training, and one of the things I've always admired about April is she is not above doing the task herself. It's what it takes to all do whatever it takes to get the job done. There's Ann at their front, for example, knows how to sterilize instruments, set up trays, do that sort of thing. And the hygienist does the same thing. She's not a hygienist and does the hygiene and expects people to clean her rooms and her trays for her. I mean, she does all of it. April, another thing unique about what you're doing with your computers, you do more things at the treatment room than a lot of offices. Talk about that a little bit.
we do all the treatment planning. We post their treatment. We send the insurance claim straight from we call them studios. We collect the money from the patient right there to schedule their next appointment, because our patients pay to schedule their appointments. They don't pay when they come in for that appointment. And what that did is it cut our cancellation to almost zero. If they've already paid for it, they don't want to miss it.
So people pay right in the treatment room, and then they make their next appointment.
Right.
Excellent. April, tell us how big Sumner is, and median income, that sort of thing.
Sumner has a population of just over 9,000 people. It's 9,298. The median household income is only $38,000 a year.
So this is not a high-income area. For those of you on the call who think, well, that's easy to do in a high-income area like Seattle or Bellevue, this is not that area. Median household income of $38,000 is not what you call wealthy.
Mm-hmm.
Mark, what other questions do you have?
I think I misunderstood. You said, is all treatment paid in advance or just encouragement for a cash discount in advance?
No, they can't make an appointment in our office without paying in full. Delta is the only insurance we still take. So if they have any other insurance, they pay for the entire amount to schedule, and then we'll bill their insurance, which will reimburse them at their appointment.
So if they do try to late cancel or do no-show, is there any penalty for that?
No, we used to do that, but it just makes them mad.
Yeah, it's a way to lose patients. But you find, since it is paid for, you remove that roadblock, and the more have to keep the appointment.
I think the majority of people cancel because they can't afford to pay it.
Right. I agree.
We've had that philosophy for a long time. The people don't cancel because it's forgot or it's inconvenient. They cancel because they can't afford the treatment. They can't pay for it. And our philosophy is always, why don't we find that out early, like before they make the appointment, and tie up that time, and then call that morning and say, yeah, I'm not feeling well, or my boss won't pay off work, or whatever excuse they come up with. Online, we think 95% of them is because they don't have the money, which is fine. I mean, we've all been in that situation. We've changed our mind or whatever on a purchase. Let's find that out in advance, and that's what we've done with that.
The other thing we did that really cut down our cancellations is we hired a company called Smile Reminder, and it goes into our software and automatically sends out email and cell phone messages for our guests to remind them of their appointment. 2 weeks, days, one day, and it does it automatically.
So you're sending text messages, voice messages,
right.
Email messages. Good. All right, what other questions you have for April? I think one thing unique about April's practice, how long have you been out of school, April?
10 years.
10 years. So she's new in practice, and she did quite well. That's another question. Some of the other doctors on the phone.
I have a question. This is Damon Anderson. April, did it take you long to incorporate inlays and onlays into your normal treatment plans? And how is insurance factoring into that?
You know, and I'll start with your insurance question. And we are very clear with our guests that their insurance may not cover anything that we do in our office. We don't ever know for sure, even with a predetermination. It says at the bottom, there's no guarantee of treatment. But we want them to have what we would want for ourselves, and this is what it is. No matter what the procedure is, no matter if it's perioscaling, you don't know if the insurance is going to cover it, but it's something that you would want for yourself. So we're clear about that up front. As far as incorporating it, I think it was a year and a half ago we were at a Blatchford meeting, and somebody on my team said they were tired of me diagnosing two or more surfaces of resin. Sick of it. We were doing these humongous resins, and I had gone and gotten inlays with my own mouth and did not want resins. So they looked at me and they said, how is that not a double standard? So I immediately decided that was it. If it was more than a two-surface filling, I wasn't doing a resin. It was going to be an inlay or an onlay because that's what I chose for myself and what I put in my family. And
okay. That's
really all it is. You just have to decide that that's it. That's what you're doing.
Okay, very good.
We've always said that the reputation that you want to enjoy 20 years from now, or the reputation that you will enjoy 20 years from now, is based on the treatment you do today. And if you want to be known for any type of treatment, and you fill in the blank, you start doing it today, and you'll be known for that. You will be known for whatever you're doing today. And so it's very difficult, in my opinion, to certain type of treatment up until a certain point in your career and then say, okay, enough of that, now I'm going to change. But your trouble is your reputation at that point is for doing the other type of treatment, whatever that was. And I'm not here tonight, I don't want to get into a discussion of what's the best treatment for a particular situation. That's really not my focus. But I think April's definition, what would I do for my own family? What would I have in my own mouth? Although having said that, having an opportunity to look in a lot of dentists' mouths, that may not be the best criteria. my family dentist told me that when I was at a dental school and I had 16 large amalgams in my mouth. He said, when you get to dental school, have all these out and have gold, and your patients will have gold. And he was absolutely right. And of course, for those of you that know me, today I have 28 units of bonded porcelain. Not saying that's the best treatment, it's what I wanted. And so that's what we present to a lot of our patients. What are some other questions for April, especially about her team? How did she select this team of people and only have three of them that get these kind of results? What questions do you have on that?
April, this is Mark again. I know Bill Blashford said if you have problems with people being sick, hire healthy people. I've heard him say that before. In extreme situations, you will have a team member go down. You just lost a third of your team. How do you function in a day like that, short notice?
You know, when you have a team that absolutely pulls together no matter what and they're committed to the success of the practice, it's not a big factor. Our hygienist last year had an emergency and was out for 5 weeks. We hired a temp only 4 of those days in those 5 weeks, and the rest of us made it happen. They're worn out, but when they're so committed to the success of the practice and to each other, that just doesn't happen. We're at work anyway.
This was one of the most amazing things I've ever seen, Mark. Helen had emergency surgery, was out for 5 weeks, and we were all prepared to start getting temporaries. And April and her team of people, too, at that point, brought in a temporary hygienist and out for 4 days, and they said, you know, this isn't worth it. And they would rather have the patients just wait, and they still went without a hygienist for about a month. And it affected their production for the year some, but not a whole lot. They're in a position where they decided, you know, we don't need to do that. We'll just wait. And I was somewhat amazed. I was skeptical when April made that decision, but one of the things I've learned about coaching doctors is that when somebody makes a decision, that's their decision, they'll probably make it work. And it was amazed. But I'm really amazed to see.
Well, our thing was the temp, they didn't treat our guests the way we wanted them treated. Mm-hmm. We're really into our spa in our office, and she didn't buy into that. And so we just decided we weren't going to let them be treated less than what we knew to be excellence in our office, so we can do it ourselves.
So describe these spa amenities that you use on every patient, including every hygiene patient. What do they offer?
They start out with a salt scrub on their hands. And we have about 5 different scents that. And then they get a paraffin wax dip for their hands, and they sit in warm mitts with those for a little bit. We have a warm scented neck pillow, massage pads on the chairs, flat screen TVs in every room that move. Wherever we've got the patient, we can move the TV for them. Partway through their procedure, we have a massage therapist who sits down next to them and does a free hand and arm massage for them, which helps them relax. We have the stuff everybody has. You know, we have all the flavored lip balms and the aromatherapy in every room. And
you do something nice. You do something nice to cleanse their palate that I thought was kind of unique.
Yeah, that's kind of our favorite new thing. We have what we call our signature mango ice cream, and it's really just Häagen-Dazs ice cream, but because we call it that, everybody now calls it the Ziggly ice cream. And we have these little glass or little porcelain bowls and real silver spoons. And every single guest at the end of their appointment gets a little scoop of mango ice cream along with a warm lemon-scented face cloth. And they're real face cloths. I don't like those disposable ones. So we have real washcloths for them. And so they get to freshen up and they get the ice cream. And then everybody leaves with cool water or Starbucks Frappuccino.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank April for her participation in this, and I would really invite, we have a few minutes left, and maybe you have any questions for April, how she put this thing together in such a short period of time.
What questions do we have? What about her profitability? What are things that she looks for? What numbers does she study? Any questions like that you have for her, here's your chance.
April, this is Kirk King from Renton, and I have a question for you on how you were able to transition your patients to paying in advance for their appointment, and was that difficult?
You know, it was really scary for us because we decided to do it on January 1st of last year. And when we first did it, we had a patient who said, okay, well, I'll see ya, and he left. And we were all like, oh, no, this isn't going to work. And everybody was freaking out, and about 2 hours later, he walked back in with his checkbook, and he said, I had to go home and get my checkbook. It is purely just retraining them. And some people absolutely won't do it. We have one lady that threw such a fit, she absolutely wouldn't do it, and she decided to go somewhere else, and that's okay.
April, one of the things when you and I were talking earlier, you said that some of these things you did in your practice, actually some people left because of that and how you dealt
right.
with that.
Well, we just had to actually wrap our heads around the fact that we weren't going to be every single person's dentist. And some of them were people that we really liked, and that was really, really hard for us, especially when we stopped seeing kids under 14. We had some families leave that we really liked. But amazingly enough, probably 70% of them have called and asked if they can come back. They don't get that kind of treatment anymore. We only see one person at a time. We're never late for their appointments because if we're more than 10 minutes late, their treatment's free.
Now, that's
like
a unique feature.
Give up the bonus.
That's a unique feature. So if they're more than 10 minutes late to see the patient, their treatment is free. And, of course, that you go ahead and do the treatment, which means it doesn't count for production or collection. So the 20% just got lowered. So everybody lost out on that thing. So everybody's on time. And this is one of the things that I really emphasize with my clients. And this is something we actually started in my practice 25 years ago, that if we didn't see you within 10 minutes of your appointed time, and we had a sign-in sheet, and if we didn't see you within 10 minutes, treatment was free today. And I figure if Pizza Hut can do it, or whichever pizza company it is, we could certainly do it in a dental office. And we
unbelievable practice.
It can be done.
Hi, April. This is Jim Burrell.
Hi, Jim.
How are you?
Good, thanks.
Thanks for sharing your experiences. My question is, your experience on in marketing, in tracking numbers at the end of each dam cycle, what's your feeling as far as what marketing modality is giving you your best ROI?
The website.
The website.
Technical terms, return on your investment, April.
Yeah, I know. I think that we're in such a market or media savvy area. We're not that far from Microsoft. I don't know, we're maybe 40, 45 miles from Microsoft. So people really look to the web in our area. That being said, we had 4 people call today that had seen our magazine ads in the, we have a local, like South Sound Home and Garden magazine. So
I closed down several marketing things. She started out with some radio, and that produced for a while. It took the taper off. She stopped using radio. April has switched around quite a bit, Jim, over the 4 years we've worked together. One of the things that we're finding is that what works today may not work tomorrow. You may reach a certain audience out there with one media, and you saturate that audience with that media, just listening to that media, and then you move on to something else. We've also found that what works in some areas doesn't work at all in other areas. And one of the things that I see with April is the courage to keep trying new things. Doing something, and then it works great, just go with that, and if it stops working, let's move on to something else.
Yeah, I know we drive our marketing people a little batty because of it. I know Mike's on the phone.
Yeah, I'm here for you.
April, this is Carol. At what stage, why did you decide to hire Bill as your coach? Why didn't you think you could do this on your own?
Oh, well, here's what happened. I probably wouldn't have if I hadn't been in this moment of panic. My associate doctor had just told me he was going to quit. I had an 8-month-old at home. He was going out and buying his own practice, and I knew for a fact.
How old are the associates?
I'm sorry?
The 8-month-old or the associate was buying his own practice?
Oh, no. No, my 8-month-old was staying at home, but my associate was going to buy his own practice, and I was overwhelmed. I didn't think I could work that many hours. I couldn't handle the thought of bringing somebody else in that wasn't treating our guests the way I wanted it. That always bugged me. I had stupid little issues. Like, when they were there and I wasn't, they'd turn the radio station to a station I didn't think was appropriate in the office. So it was just stuff like that that I was in pure panic mode. What am I going to do? And I happened to run into Lori Huber, who could not have asked me better questions. I didn't even know there was anything available to help me. So that was, it was a lifesaver.
So you think Bill helped guide you through this traumatic time in your career?
Oh, I know he did.
Yeah.
He helped me figure out exactly what I wanted, which is all I really needed. I didn't have time in the pure chaos of the busyness to figure out what I wanted. We were so busy putting out fires and taking care of the thousands of people we were seeing in a week to handle that. I mean, I had two hygienists, and I mean, it was just crazy.
Well, I want to thank April for being on this call with me tonight. I want to thank all the doctors who participated. We are going to send all of you an email invitation to talk to us, talk to one of our representatives. We have several people that do enrollment consultations. There's no pressure at all. We're very eager to talk with you. We're also perfectly willing to accept the fact that you don't want to talk to us, and we'll honor that. We will not bug you at all. But what my request is that when you get the first email, at least respond to it. And if you get a call from Carol or Peter, David Curry, Sharon Bard in Texas, at least respond to it and say, yes, I'm interested or I'm not interested. But I want to thank all of you for being here tonight, and if we can be able to talk to you in the future, please get a hold of us. If you're ever interested in the book, Playing Your A Game, please go on our website, blatchford.com. The book is available there. Thank you very much, everybody, and have a great August.